Hi guys, my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Russell.
I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group. It's great. It really is great to be here. It's great for several reasons. First of all, I love coming up to Broward and Palm Beach. I don't even know where I am. I figure I'm in Palm Beach County. You can't drive that long and not be in Palm Beach. I'm Cleveland or something, but it's nice to be in Broward or Palm Beach where I'm like appreciated. Rather than Dade County, you know, they can't wait for me to. I would say, well, at least in Broward and Palm Beach, those guys are nice. I like them, and so I see a lot of old friends. You know, I'm sure there's some people here I haven't met before, but it's good to see you. I noticed the Rebbe was here. I got a little nervous when I saw him because I'm really excited. What happened was, you know, I sponsor James. I'm saying that in public now. I usually don't say that in public. One of the conditions of our, now James knows this, one of the conditions of our sponsorship is he wasn't really allowed to tell anybody about that. Or say Russell's my sponsor, but I sponsor him. And you guys know, you know, I'm a Jewish kid, but you know, I'm a Christian also. I mean, whatever that deal is. But the rabbi says, they can't un-Jew you, apparently, you know, so. So either way, so the deal is I'm like covered, you know what I mean? No matter what, I've got all things, I got all bases covered. Unless we're under Sharia law, and then there's a lot of trouble, you know. But I'm starting to support that deal too, because it'll put the guys on top again, you know. But it's good to be, you know. We usually go to AA meetings and churches and things like that and that kind of deal. And I was talking to James. The way this whole thing came about is, you know, he knows I go to Bible study, and you know, I read the Bible a lot, and a lot of times I talk about it at meetings. And I'm not going to. A lot of you guys have heard me before. I'm not going to do a whole long thing. I have no idea what I'm doing tonight, but I'm not going to do a whole long thing on the biblical roots of AA and what happened, and you know, the Dr. Bob and the good old timers and where this all came from, and Sermon on the Mount and all that stuff. Most of you guys have heard it before, and you know what it is, and all you have to do is read the books and see what's going on. So I'm not here to convince you of anything or go into the history or any of that stuff. But I absolutely believe that we each have to find our own way in this deal. You know what I mean? We get to be, you know, my religion, the way I feel about my religion today, and to me religion is not a dirty word. The way I feel about it today is that I could never impose my beliefs on anybody, but I'm obligated to expose my beliefs to people. And that's how we get things in here. People, you get a sponsor, you get the people, you talk to people, and you get exposed to things. And I'm not so sure, even in my church, the church I belong to, which I love, and even with my sponsor, who, you know, we're essentially both of the same deal, you know, that anybody ultimately believes exactly the same thing, because you know the truth is we're all individuals, and it's all for everybody. It's all God as you understand Him. You know, whether I believe in Jesus Christ and it's Christ as I understand Him, or you believe in, you know, whatever it is, it's as you understand Him. So, you know, so James came up to me. We were talking one day about Bible studies, and I said, "Listen, why?" Because you know, I said, "James, I said, why don't you?" "Why don't you find a study up in Broward where they're studying the Torah?" And he found one. You looked around, it was hard to find one, but you found one here at this shul. The Chabad, I have to say, now listen, I want to tell you something. Paul, how many people know Paul E? You know, well, Paul, I know Paul has, I know, first of all, I know he has his spies here. Because I know how he operates, you understand? I know exactly how he operates. As a matter of fact, I was speaking to him about 2 hours before I came down here. There's another guy who I sponsor in Manhattan doing a similar deal with this stuff. You know, he saw it on the internet in a group in Manhattan. He's going over there with the guys from East Hampton. But Paulie wanted to make sure that I got the pronunciation right, because I kept on saying it's Chabad. He says it's Chabad. Chabad. So all you guys say is Chabad. So I said, why don't you do a study over here? And so he got involved in this, and I don't know whether you know anything about James, but James has a bunch of tattoos on his arm, and I thought it was incredible. You started this study over here at Chabad, and he's there, and they see him here with all the tattoos, and of course he piqued the interest of the rabbi, and the rabbi said, "Well, how'd you get over here?" And he says, "Well, my sponsor, who's a Jewish kid who used to be who's now a Presbyterian, you know, told me I should start, you know," so that got the rabbi all excited or something, and he said, "Well, why don't you have an AA meeting here?" So here we are. So I think it, I did say, And there's a reason I'm sharing that, but it was good to see the rabbi. And of course, I was a little nervous because the last time I really got real close to a rabbi was at my bar mitzvah. It was right after bar mitzvah when we were standing up there, and he put his arms around me and he said, "Now, Yussel," he says, "Yussel," he says, "we want you to come back to the temple, you know, after this, you know, after the party, come back to the temple." And I said, "Well, sure, Rabbi, of course." And then they threw me the party, and I got drunk off of champagne, and that's the last they ever saw me. 30 years later, I surfaced as a deacon in a Presbyterian church. I don't know how that worked, but somehow that's where the Lord put me. So that's where I am. So it's good to be here. Actually, this whole religion thing and everything, which is what is it? It's like I don't know whether it's it's a part. You know, I like to talk about emotional sobriety. I like to talk about the stuff. I don't know how many of you guys got the internet deal on this, who actually got the email on this with I didn't bring it, and I wish I had where it had the letter from Bill Wilson on after the booze. It's all about unhealthy dependencies and emotional sobriety. It's all about becoming emotionally it's all about spiritual sobriety and emotional sobriety and unhealthy dependencies. And I don't know why it is. Well, I guess I do know why it is, to keep down the fist fights. Why it is that things that are discussed in the big book, in various pages of the big book, are taboo in AA meetings. I don't know where you go to discuss the things, because we have a lot of youngsters in it. And I'm not putting down anybody who only has a month or 2 months or 5 months or anything like that, but there are stuff discussed in the family afterwards, in chapters of the wives, all over the big book, which I don't want to call it advanced A, which is part and parcel of our program. And to me, for individuals who are truly seeking to go further than like the first 3 months, or the first 5 months, or the first 1 year, seeking to grow up, there are things that you really need to get involved in as a grown-up. But it's not discussed in AA because alcoholics, you know, like me, are sensitive. You know, I used to say to my sponsor, I said, I'm sensitive. He says, no, you're not sensitive. He said, Russell, great artists are sensitive. You're touchy. It's different. You know what I mean? So if you discuss, so religion is discussed in AA. And this is how religion is discussed in AA. You know, about people who are recovering Catholics or recovering this. Or, you know, I can't stand with, or I'm spiritual, I'm not religious. But the problem is, religion is all over the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And most of our founders are religious and belong to religious associations. And in the book, they say, we encourage this. We encourage church membership and membership in synagogues. And of course, they're talking about this usually with somebody who's been older, who's been around for a while, yet it can't be discussed in Alcoholics Anonymous, because three guys in the back of the room will leave and scream and yell. And God forbid, because we're all codependent. I've never met an alcoholic who isn't codependent, who isn't insanely worried about catering to the sickest guy in the group. You know, God forbid we should discuss God or anything that's mature. The sickest son of a bitch in the group, who's not going to stay anyway, by the way, because he wants to drink, may walk out, and we wouldn't want that to happen. And some people need to walk out. Listen, some alcoholics need to, you can't, you know, I don't want to rob an alcoholic of his last drink. I want to rob him of his desperation. If you got an alcohol, listen, if this is one of these deals that you're going to do AA, as long as it doesn't offend you, you're not going to do AA. Because how can you do a program where the whole aspect of the program is to fundamentally change every idea you have, get rid of every old idea you have, and get you to a point where you become open-minded, that's what the second step is about, without offending you? I was offended at every meeting I went to and resented people all over the place in Alcoholics Anonymous. The only reason I'm sober today and whatever sobriety or emotional maturity I have today is only because I was so scared of drinking, I didn't leave and I took it anyway. Instead of getting mad, I tried to understand and I tried to accept. And I know a lot of you guys feel exactly the same way, because I know I'm not unique. I no longer feel like I'm unique. I understand that if this is what happened to me over 29 years, I know it happened to you. I know every one of you in here, if you've been here more than 10 years, 15 years, 5 years, have been in AA meetings or been told by sponsors things that you didn't want to hear, that you didn't like, that you thought was a bunch of crap, that you wanted to argue with, and you didn't leave, you didn't run off, you stayed, and all of a sudden 5 years later you sort of like are saying the same thing to other guys. And now you have with it. So I know it's happened to every one of you guys, the whole deal. So I want to discuss the things, you know, I like discussing things that aren't normally discussed in AA meetings. So, you know, and I think in order to discuss emotional sobriety, You got to touch some things that are, and I've got some things I want to read. And I'm going to try to do this real fast. I usually flip through the book. I'm not even going to flip through the book. I just want to read some stuff. And I passed out this thing, the 12 symptoms of spiritual awakening. Now, how many people got this on the internet? Now, I'm embarrassed. I didn't have enough to pass around. I didn't know how many people would be here. I only had 30. But I'll send them. If you give me your internet, your email address, I'll send them to you, or I'll bring more next time. I'm embarrassed to say that I got this at an Al-Anon meeting. You know, my wife's an Al-Anon. You know, and to placate her, because I love her, and to placate her, she asked me, her sponsor was speaking at an Al-Anon meeting, and so she said, would you go to the meeting? I said, absolutely, I'll go to the meeting with you. And, as long as I have 10 minutes rebuttal. No, I said, I'll go to the meeting. And I went down to Homestead to the meeting. It was a very nice meeting, hanging around those Al-Anon types. I mean, what can you say about people that have to go to meetings for the rest of their lives because they know us? What is that? You know, I said, my name's so-and-so, I'm a codependent, I met an alcoholic in an elevator, and now I'm... Well, because we're so toxic, you know, that's the way we are. We're the only people, you know, that's why people have problems sponsoring people. Because we're tough. At our sickest, we know how to manipulate people. We somehow know the sickest alcoholic in the world who has totally tied his life in knots and made it into a pretzel where nobody can undo it. And if you try to undo it, you know what alcoholics say? You can give an alcoholic the answer to the most incredible question. He'll just look you in the eye and says, I can't do that. And you'll say, well, then try this. He says, I can't do that. By the time he's done, you're drinking. You know, I mean, you say, this guy, no matter what I suggest, this guy can't do it. Of course he can't do it. Because he doesn't want to get well. He wants to get you drunk. That's his whole object in life, is to get you crazy and to have you focused on him. But alcoholics have that strange way. We have that strange ability to somehow make you feel that you're responsible for their situation. And if you weren't responsible, you're now responsible. And if you don't make them better, it's your fault, and you're to blame, and you got something to feel guilty about. And I learned this 8 years on relay from 11 o'clock at night till 8 o'clock in the morning. Every Friday night in Dade County, I would get the phone. So if an alky called, you know, let me tell you something, I would get the worst of the worst. They call up and they say, yeah, I'm out here on Southwest 8th Street, and I need a ride to, it's 3 o'clock. I need someone to pick me up and take me to detox. You know, and I'd say, well, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a taxi cab service. This is A. He says, well, that's not the way they do it in Connecticut. And the guy's drunk. He says, what's your name? I says, my name's Russell. He says, Russell what? He says, I'm the only Russell here. I says, you're not going to report me, are you? I wouldn't want to lose this job. You know, I've been doing it for 8 years. The only reason I have it is I can't give it away. I got to talk to schmucks like you, you know. It's alcohol. You know, you get people on the phone, you know. He says, some guy on the phone, he says, my name's so-and-so, and I'm a PhD, and I went to rehab, and I stopped drinking, but I'm starting to drink again, and I need to stop drinking. I need some help. There's only one thing. I says, what's that? He says, don't talk to me about Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, lady, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. You dialed Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the only way I ever... There is nothing like working with alcoholics to understand your own mind and the alcoholic mind and understand how sick we really are. But in any event, one of the great things that I like to get involved in, even when I do the step series, I'll be doing this for 3 weeks, and then I start at the 12-step house, the step series, Tuesdays on August 24th. I start at the 12-step house.
What time?
8:30. It's because I really like to talk about emotional sobriety. I sponsor a lot of guys. And you can sponsor as many people as you want. You know, you can sponsor a million people. You really can. You know, you see, you guys think you can't sponsor a lot, but you can. You may not be able to talk to them, but you can sponsor them. You understand what I'm saying? You just don't spend a lot of time with them. You know, don't worry about it. You can sponsor 10 people, you might get a call from one, maybe. So you got to sponsor 100 people to get like two of them to call you up. You know, but the point is, hey, God. But it's nothing, sponsoring guys is just a wonderful thing, and nothing ensures sobriety as you know intensive work with alcoholics. And that's part of the picture. But a lot of these guys, I started sponsoring guys that had like 18, 19, 20, 22, 25, 27 years. And you know, what really is interesting to me is, and I love newcomers. I really love newcomers. But what's interesting to me is a guy with 15, 17, 18, 20 years who's miserable, who's not happy with his sobriety, who's physically sober and picking up medallions, maybe even going to meetings, but is not, not on the rocket ship ride. You know, not on that ride where we've experienced, you know, it says we've experienced much of heaven, we've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence we had not even dreamed. Now that's not to say problemless. That's not to say without problems. I mean, God knows I got my problems, I got my difficulties, I got my stuff going on. I got my things that I gotta deal with every day. I'm a human being, I live on the planet. I got all the stuff that I gotta deal with, and yet somehow, just like it said in the Bible, you know, that line where it says, in this world you'll have problems, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. I think the Apostle Paul said, I've learned to be content in all things. It's just the secret. He says, it's the secret. I've learned the secret of being content in all things. I've learned the secret of overcoming circumstances. Not overcoming circumstances in that learning how to get the money, learning how to feel good about myself and my life, even when I don't have the money. Not overcoming circumstance, i.e. learning how to get my wife back, learning how to feel okay and good about myself and good about my life, even if my wife isn't coming back. We talk about it a lot. We skirt around it a lot in AA when we talk about acceptance is the answer to all my problems, and a couple of other places we talk about in AA, and the promises we talk about it. We talk about no matter how bad things are and what's going on, we see where it can help others. We get a feeling of usefulness, you know, and that feeling of self-pity leaves. We fear people leaves, you know, fear of financial, financial insecurity. I said to Ray O'Keefe, I said, when do I get financially better? He says, you're not, what are you talking about? He says, well, the promise is, it says, I don't have financial, he says, what are you talking about? It doesn't say you're not going to be financially insecure. He says, yeah, it says, he says, no, it doesn't. It says you'll lose the fear. He says, you'll probably be broke all your life. He says, but it won't. He says, Russ, you're going to be broke all your life. Hey, but listen, it ain't going to bother you. Well, thanks. That's very reassuring, you know. By the way, I want to talk about this stuff, and I'm going to read you some things. Tell you a little story that I tell every once in a while. So, because, you know, it would be impossible for me to say, you know, we're looking at these 12 things, many of which, all of which I've experienced. I'm not saying I experience every single second, I'm perfect, or anything. You know, one of the dangers of having a meeting like this when you're talking about these 12 things is you have, it's almost like, I don't want anybody to suspect that I'm saying, hey, I've made it. You know, I mean, forget it. You know, I can get as crazy as the next guy. But consistently, over a period of time, more and more this sort of stuff becomes part of my life. And I think you guys understand. You guys who have some sobriety, some longer sobriety, been around for not. I think you probably read some of these things, and you can probably see in your life as you compare it to the way you were. You can probably say, "Yeah, this stuff is happening to me." By the way, as you read this thing, you'll notice that number seven. I'm going to read them, you know, because they're out to you. This is what we got. We got 12 symptoms of the spiritual awakening. And by the way, when I started thinking about, well, how do I talk about these things? How do you get these things? I realized, you know, it took 29 years. You know, I used to hear these guys talk. You know, I'd be sober like a week or 2 weeks or a year or something like that. And I'd hear a guy speak with 20 years. And I'd say to myself, man, I want what that guy... You know what it says? What it doesn't say in our book, it says, if you want what we have, there's a step before the steps. If you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So there's a step before the step. The step is you got to want what we have, and you got to be willing or ready to go to any length to get it. And then you're ready. You're not even ready unless. And there are guys that come in here and they want what we have, but they're not willing to go to any length. They're just not willing to go to any length. Or they don't want what we have, and they're not willing to go. They want something else. They want to get their wife back. They want to, whatever it is they want. They don't want what we have. Or they're not even looking. They don't even have a we. They're not even looking at me or him or. But I would look at these guys. I would have these guys, we all have guys sit before, and I'd say, I wish I could be like him. I want to be like him. I want what, I don't even know what he has, but I wish I'd like to have what he has. He has something, I know it's different than me. And I used to hear these guys speak with 20 years and 29 years, and I'd say, and I'd have like 3 months, and you know, I'm thinking like an alcoholic, I want what we have, and I'd like it next Tuesday. I'd like it next Tuesday. Now, if you've been around here for a while, you understand that the only way you can feel like a guy who has 29 years sobriety is you gotta put in 29 years. It takes exactly 29 years to have 29 years physical, emotional, and spiritual sobriety. And that's not to say, as they like to say in meetings. What do they say? What's that line in the meeting? The guy with more sobriety is the guy that gets up the earliest of the morning. It's like 29 years doesn't mean crap, right? You know what I mean? You got up at 4 o'clock and you got 2 days and you're, you know, well, whatever. The bottom line is that obviously things take time. And anybody who's been around here a lot knows there's no one secret. Well, I know I always talk about the one thing, because I believe relationship and developing a relationship with God is key. And the key thing about that is not even so much developing the relationship. The key thing about that is getting rid of the stubbornness so that you can understand that it is the deal. You know, I mean, it may take years to get to a point where your relationship with God is such so that a lot of these things there's a total transformance, or you, it's just an incredible, amazing experience. But the fact of the matter is, there are so many people that fight the God thing, until the day they die, they're gonna try to do this thing based upon their own self-reliance. And if there's anything our book says, it says, there is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now. There's no question about where the book stands, where A stands on this thing. There may be a lot of false prophets and people out there. You know, we allow everybody into A. I mean, if guys stood up in AA and say the steps of, I've heard it said in AA. I know guys stand up and they say, I saw some guy doing Mises, I've never done the steps. I don't believe in God. Whatever, they'll let you say anything, and you can go off into the bushes and follow those people. But for pound, the people I've seen who have what I want all follow the steps. They work the steps, they work this program, they sponsor people, and they believe in God, and they have a relationship with God, and they don't have a problem with it, and then they don't get bent out of shape. You know, so I'd like to think I'm sort of mainstream. Sometimes I don't know. In any event, I'm looking at these 12 symptoms of spiritual awakening, and I'm gonna touch upon just a couple of things that I think sort of help me out, because I can't like give you the secret and tell you, well, do this and you'll have this, because that's not the way it works. You sort of like have to do everything to get anything. You can't leave anything. You can't say, it may be a spiritual law. The moment you say, I'm gonna do everything, but I'm not gonna do this one thing, I don't think you get nothing. It says it somewhere in the book. It says that somewhere in the book. Half measures of LSD. That's kind of weird. You'd think half measures should like give you 50%, at least 10%. Like, they say half. I'm not making this crap up. Am I making this up? Is it in there? Half measures of LSD, nothing, right? Okay, these guys were theists. Okay, here we go. The 12 symptoms. One, an increased tendency to let of a spiritual awakening. An increased tendency is to let things happen rather than make them happen. You know, cuts down on the phone calls. Cuts down on the arguments. Cuts down on trying to get the last word in. I remember my sponsor said to me, he says, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? And I said, what are you talking about? I want both. He says, you can't have both. Can you imagine that? You can't have both? I might as well kill myself. What's the use of living if you can't be right and happy? You know, well, first of all, I've already got right nailed. I walk in here right. I've always been right. I'm absolutely right. I'm alky right. That means if you disagree with me, you gotta die. Because you're so stupid. You know, so I'm right. I've got the right thing already nailed down. I'm always right because I'm so brilliant. You know what I mean? Now, if I could just be happy, then I'd be perfect. You know, he says you can't have both. He says, because if you gotta be right, he says, then you always have to get the last word in. You'll always be in conflict with somebody. You'll always be upset about something. There'll be always somebody disagreeing with you. And I don't know whether it was 3 years, 4 years, or 7 years, but the day came in my life where I said, screw right, I'd just soon be happy. It was about that time I stopped arguing with my wife. She'd say things like, you know, you are the worst husband in the world. I said, you know, you're probably right. Can we go? You never take out the garbage. I said, right again. Because I figure, you know what I realized? I'm a lawyer, and it costs a lot of money to go to trial. It costs a lot of money to go to trial, and it's a lot of aggravation. So I figure I'll just go straight to the sentencing. Because 90%, really, with my wife, I can always pay the fine. It's like dinner or something, or the movies, or, something. I don't know. And, after a while, it just, because they want to fight, and you say, you're probably right, and they just, oh, forget it, Number two, frequent attacks of smiling. Three, feelings of being connected with others in nature. Four, frequent overwhelming episodes of appreciation. I had a guy once in the group who said, his name is Nate Levine, he said, I have an attitude of gratitude. Gives you an aptitude for living. It's nothing like gratitude. I don't know how you fit, there are certain things you can do, and there's nothing wrong with that. What's that, the gratitude lists, and what I used to have to do, and it still works, and it's a good thing today is there's always somebody worse off than you. Look at for somebody to help, go to meetings and stuff like that. But you know what's great, what's really great, is when somehow, some way, the sunlight of the Spirit comes into your life and transforms you, so you can be grateful in any given situation, without doing the exercise. He says, I was feeling that, so I did a gratitude. There's nothing wrong with any of that stuff. Wouldn't it be great if you were just grateful? Now, I'm not naturally grateful, but that would be a cool thing if you could be just grateful. Number five, a tendency to think and act spontaneously rather than from fears based upon past experience. Man, I'll tell you, fear is the corrosive bread. Fear is just unbelievable. Fear holds you so bad. How many people on their deathbed will not live their lives, but just live the lives that they thought they should have lived so other people would like them? When I was 15 years sober, some guy came up to me, because I was always talking about spiritual stuff and things like that, and he came up to me, he wasn't an AA guy, he was just some guy, and he said, you always talk about God and the Bible and stuff like that. He says, you ever been to a Bible study? And I said, I'm Jewish, I don't go to Bible study. He says, well, there's Thursday morning, every Thursday morning, Oak Color Presbyterian Church, it's non-denominational. Why don't you come? We got bagels, coffee, whatever it is, and come. And I was about to say, and here's what I was thinking. I'm like 39 years old. 39, I'm self-supporting through my own contributions. I'm paying my own Visa bill. Nobody's helping me out. And I'm thinking about, what would my Aunt Joan think? What would my mother think? I'm thinking about, what would my grandparents think? How would Moses feel about this? I'm thinking, what would they think of me in Alcoholics Anonymous? I'm like scared. Now listen to this. It's breezing through my mind. What would AA think? As if there is an AA. Or an AA police. Or anybody. What would you guys, I'm trying to figure out what to do with my life. Trying to decipher what other people might think about me if I do something. What a crummy way to live. And what I realized? That's the way I lived all my life. Prior to being freed of that. My entire life, what I did, what I said, what I wore, who I associated with, what parties I went. I remember going to parties and not leaving the party because, you ready for this? I didn't want to leave because I thought if I left, they'd talk about me. So to stop them from talking about me behind my back, I'd stay there. Stay at the table, stay at the bar. Sure, you're laughing, you don't know what it's like. But the bottom line is the way we sort of manipulate people because we run our lives on absolute fear and we don't even question it because it's just the way we are. It's the way we think, it's the way we are. We come to an AA meeting, some guy like me starts talking about it, you say, holy shit, I did that. And you don't even realize you're doing it because it's like part of your thinking. How sick is that? That's not drinking, but that's the real alcoholism. That's why you drank, because you know why? Because when you drink, you don't give a crap what they think about you. You really don't give a crap. You walk in that bar, you want to belong to the group, you have a couple of shots, you own the group. Until the stuff stops working for you. It's a corrosive, it runs every thought. Let me tell you something. Fear decides what school you're going to go to, what you're going to be, what you're going to say, how you're going to talk, whether you're going to, it decides what car you're going to drive, what you're going to purchase. It decides your financial situation. Listen, I am one of the main guys. I was maxed out. I lost all my credit cards when I was 9 years sober because I couldn't stop spending. I was a spendaholic. I told my sponsor, I said, I had money problems. He says, I'll solve that. He says, what do I have to do? He says, it's very simple. He said, earn more or spend less. I said, I need option three. I didn't realize that when you spend more than you make, that's a form of lying. That's a form of of being dishonest, living a dishonest life. But what was I spending on? I was spending money buying things I didn't need to impress people I didn't like with money I didn't even have. You know, I mean, just getting on time payments, you know, just building up because I thought, you know, if I drove this car, if I had this going on, you know, you would like me or something. You know, what kind of sickness is that? That sets up more anxiety. It's more about fear. It's all about fear. Attended these things. So when the guy said Bible study, I was about to say no. You know, it had nothing to do with whether it's better for me or maybe associating with other people or spiritual people or on my road. Hey, on a road to a better relationship with the God of your understanding, where would you go? You can continue to hang out in AA. Nothing wrong with that. It could be like a coffin for you. Your AA coffin. Meanwhile, you know, all the spirituality in the world and the wisdom of the world isn't locked into AA rooms. There's a little bit of sickness in there too. You know, we're not exactly well people's anonymous. You know? You know, in order to grow spirit, you know, listen, I'm not, for those of you who go to NA, I'm not putting down NA. I know a lot of wonderful people that are in NA. But for many, many years, I'd have these guys that were in NA who were drug addicts, and I'd find them with 15 years, 16 years, which is a long time in NA. All of a sudden, I'd see them sort of slipping into AA meetings. And I'd sponsor a few of them. And they tell me I'm an NA, you know, but I'm coming to AA. And he says, because I have a lot. And he'd say, but don't tell anybody. If they find out, they'll kill me. Now, I don't know anything about NA or whether that's true or not. But the bottom line is I know I have to go wherever I have to grow to get better. You know what I mean? And if I have to go to Torah, to read the Torah, or to read about, or to go, I may have to go, you know, in the book it says, in Vision for You, it says, we know only a little. God will reveal more from you. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave, the spiritual fellowship you crave. I met my sponsor, John Glenn there, who's got 55 years sobriety. Thank you, John. 55 years sobriety. A wonderful man. Now, when my sponsors come to see me, you know, and we're having lunch and everything, they don't want to know whether I'm there. They're going to say, is John going to be there? I met him at that Bible study. I met him at that Bible study. He's been going to Amy's with me for like 10, 12 years. I met him at that Bible study. He got sober through the church. He's a Baptist preacher. He ministers down at the jail. I've learned so much from him. And he's introduced me to other people who have 70 years sobriety, 60 years sobriety, all over. They're all over the world. People who think like this are on the same track. How are you going to meet him if you only hang out here? If you don't look above this thing. And I was almost going to say no. And the reason why I was going to say no to the Bible study, that this guy was invited, you know, God sends all sorts of angels into your life. It sends all sorts of people into your life. Bob Earl calls them Eskimos to lift you out, balcony people, to lay you onto a better life. All these people are coming into your life and you're avoiding them and you're not picking up the phone and you're saying, I was about to say no. And you know why I was going to say no? Because I was worried about what my Aunt Joan might think. I was worried about what some clown who wasn't going to stay sober in AA, what they might think in AA. Because I heard somebody scream at somebody one day in AA, you know, we don't talk about religion in here. I heard him scream about that. And I said, well, that must be true. Because everybody was scared to talk back to him. So I said, if they find out I'm going to a Bible study, I'll probably have to leave AA or something like that. This is 15 years sober. I'm worried about what people will think about me. What kind of sobriety is that? What's that all about? But you know, I got to the point, at least in my life by 15 years, that I realized that decisions based upon fear, unreasonable fear, are not really good decisions. So I said yes, and I went there, and I've been going there ever since. Became a member of the church, deacon of that church, you know, involved in the Bible study. I met hundreds and hundreds of people. You don't have to have a medallion in your pocket to be my friend. The incredible experiences I've had in the personal relationships with people are just unbelievable, just going to this deal. Okay. 6, an unmistakable ability to enjoy each moment, to live one day at a time, you know, rather than living in the future. 7. Now, if you guys have 7, you'll see right here it looks like it says a loss of ability to work, which actually has happened to me. Well, let me tell you something. You know, when I first, it's actually a loss of an ability to worry. I was a worry wart. My grandmother was a worry wart. Everybody I knew was a worry wart. If I wasn't worried about something, I worried that I wasn't worried about something. I worried that I was constantly worried. You know, a loss of, I never thought it would get to the point where I'd ever be in my life where I didn't have, and I got things I could worry about. I mean, I got stuff going on in my life. I mean, I've had cancer. I've got stuff going on. I got stuff. You can't have a wife, 4 children, and 6 grandchildren and not have worries. I got all sorts of stuff going on. I'm in this economy just like you guys are in this economy. I got the same worries about economics that everybody has. So I sometimes sit around and say, you know, I should really be, I should be a lot more worried than I am. I don't worry at all. And then I said, nah, I'll just leave it this way. Because I've done my worrying. I know what it's like to live a life of worry. It doesn't help at all. It doesn't put a dime in my pocket. It doesn't make me feel any better. It doesn't help anybody else. I'm just excited for the gift I have where I don't have to sit around and worry about stuff. But then, you know, when it was first handed to me, of course I had my secretary draw this up. So she wrote it out. This is a Freudian slip. A loss of ability to work. So when somebody in the car, we were driving up there, I think it was Lisette. Is she here? Where's Lisette? She's short, so... Oh, there she is. Okay. It's hard to see. She said, well, what is this loss of ability to work? Before I realized I was worried, I'd say, I'm thinking about it. What is that? I says, yeah, I have lost the ability to work. Not really, but I'll tell you one thing. I was in the dry dock group in California. You know, they have all these... it's one of these things that all these groups meet, CA and everything, and they have actually something called workaholism. Workaholics. You know, I mean, believe it or not, there is a thing called workaholism, you know. I know what that's like because I've sponsored guys that have it. You know, obsessed with working, obsessed with that deal. And I took that test and luckily I'm not that. 8 is a loss of interest in conflict. 9, a loss of interest in interpreting the actions of others. A loss of interest in interpreting the action of others. You know, some guy, I mean, my whole life spent, I had something funny happening with my wife. My whole life spent, you know, passing some guy in the hall who I'd say hi, and he wouldn't say hi. He didn't say hi to me, and he passed me. I'd say, what the hell is that all about? I can't believe that. I can't believe that son of a bitch. Who the hell does he think he is? What did I do to him? It must be because of this thing. Meanwhile, he didn't even see me because his mind was going a million miles per hour thinking about something else. My wife and I went out to eat the other day. You know, after I did the Al-Anon meeting and I got this slip of paper from the Al-Anon people, we go out to eat and we go to this restaurant called Capri. Very nice restaurant. I took her out there and the waitress comes by. Just a wonderful gal. Just a sweet gal. She's very nice. She's being very pleasant. And my wife says, she's very nice, isn't she? I said, yeah, she's very nice. She says, she's talking a lot to you, though, isn't she? You know, she hasn't said anything to me. I said, no, why? She just came by. She was just very nice. She was very nice. So then she comes by and she brings the bread and she looks at me and says, did you see where she placed the bread? I couldn't control myself. I should have restrained myself, but I said, isn't that number 9? I got this at her meeting. You know what I mean? Loss of interest in interpreting the actions of others. How about loss of interest in conflict? Not looking to start a fight. A loss of interest in judging others. A loss of interest in judging self. How's that? You ever hear that little muzak? I'm an idiot. I'm an asshole. I'm a jerk. I'm stupid. I don't deserve to live. You know, it's sort of that alky muzak. Gaining the ability to love without expecting anything in return. Getting the ability to love without expecting anything in return. So, you know, a lot of this stuff, this is the kind of stuff that I would like to see happen. With a guy with 15 years, you know, when I see a guy with 15 years or 18, you know, I know there's a certain amount of breaking in time. I know there's a certain amount of time that's spent sort of breaking into this deal. You don't expect a guy with 3 years to have this going or maybe 5 years, but I mean, I'll tell you what, you know, when you get about 10, 12, 15, 18 years, something like that, you want to have some of this stuff going on. You don't want to look like you got 3 months fighting the world and pissed off and angry at people and things like that. And I learned a long time about hanging around these guys, and that's one of the keys, too, who I hang out with, the men I hang out with. You know, I heard a long time ago, not an AA meeting, you know, the person you'll wind up being in the next five in 5 years from now will be dependent upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. And really, the books I read depends upon the people I hang out with. They're the ones that tell me what books to read and where to go and how to experience. Who am I hanging out with? Am I hanging out with balcony people? You're going to hang out with people who are... If you hang out with people that are involved in this stuff, you're going to get to be this way. If you hang out with people who are involved in this stuff, you're going to get to be this way. If you hang out with yourself, you ain't. I promise you, I don't care how wonderful you are, I don't care how much you read about, you hang out with yourself, you ain't. It's like, I was telling somebody, you know, it's like playing tennis. You know, I used to play tennis, you know, and I was never considered myself a pro or anything like that, but I used to play tennis. Whenever I play somebody who was not good, I was terrible. Whenever I play somebody who was good or better than me, I was like a superstar. I always played better when the opponent I had was better than me. it would force me to chase after the ball, would force me to do better. I always did better when the guy I was up against had more on the ball than I did. I want to be with that guy that's farther down the road than I am. You know, I want to make sure there's always somebody ahead of me. That's why one of the reasons I go to this Bible study and I hang around with John. I hang around, you know, John's like, what are you, 83 or 84? How old are you?
All
right. Never mind. Whatever. It's a tough question. I promised him I wouldn't grill him. 83. Well, you know, we go to like at 6 o'clock. He goes to a church, and I go to this little traditional service that he has. I go to my own church, but I go to this little traditional service he has, and he introduces me. And there's about 35 people in there, and they all have gray hair. I mean, silver gray hair. Except for the bald guys, all silver gray hair. They have a whole section. There's nobody. He's the youngest guy there. He's like the youngster. They're all like 90, 100, that kind of stuff. They got a retired preacher. He's 83 years old or something like that. And he's a former. He used to do tent revivals. All of that. He's incredible, you know. And, of course, none of the young people go. Nobody else. Only these people that are like 80, 90 years old. This guy has forgotten more than anybody else knows. And I go there. They sing the old-time hymns. And they have a whole section. The whole right side, women, all widows. Because by that time, they're all widows. The guys are dead. They got the widow section. And when they call the choir coming up, like there's 30 people in the audience, they say the choir. What do they call the choirs? The joyful noisemakers. When they call the choir up, if there's 30 people in the audience, 20 people get up. And I stand there and I get to listen. And those are the people I get to hang out with those people. There's nothing like nobody hangs out with elderly. Nobody hangs out with the people anymore that really have learned the most and have the most experience. And you can learn from them. These people got this down. They got this down. There's nothing wrong with A. I'm an A devotee. I love A. I'll stack my A, my A activities against anybody, okay? But let me tell you something. You know, there's nothing like hanging around with people who are there, who have been there, who has done. You know, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will have the money, and the man with the money will have had an experience. There's nothing like hanging out with people who have already gotten it, are there and beyond, and they're ready and they're okay. You know, there's an old saying. You know, one of the things I tell, and I'll go into this next week. You know, but is about the miner story. And I don't know how many of you have heard the miner story. This is a true story. It happened in May 26th of 1863. It's around the time of the Civil War. There had been a big gold strike in California, as you know, and there was another gold strike around Virginia City. And the gold had petered out and everything like that. And the story is about something that was discovered in a place called Alden's Gulch. It was one of the largest silver and gold mine strikes. And this is a true story. It's an incredible story. And I'll tell you a little side to the story after I'm done. And I've shared this in a lot of AA meetings. A lot of AA meetings, this story. And it's really about my life, and it's really sort of like a key for me. And you know, that's the marvelous thing about AA. It says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, what we are like. You know what's wonderful about our stories is they're true. There's nothing like a true story. They're not made up. And this is a true story. There were at least 7 miners. And there was this camp that started because of the gold rush, and the gold had been petering out. It was about by the Black Hills, which is Crow territory, and miners weren't really allowed to go in there because it was the Crow Indians. And the gold had been petering out for some time, and so a whole band, there were about 400 miners, or 500 miners at this camp, and about 300 went out into Crow territory to look for more gold and look for mines and things like that. And these 7 guys who were straggling behind went out after them. And they got captured by the Crow Indians. There was a guy named Bill Fairweather. I got their names here, as a matter of fact. Here's a guy. There was this is a true story. There's Barney Hughes, Thomas Cover, Henry Rogers, Henry Edgar, Bill Sweeney, and a guy named Bill Fairweather. And they went out looking, and there was another guy who was he was half Indian, you know, and half Anglo, and they got captured by the Crows, and they managed to escape except for one guy, the half Indian stayed behind. And they went back to Bannock, Montana. This happened outside of Bannock, Montana. At that time it was Idaho territory, but then it became Montana. And they're about 60 miles outside of Bannock, Montana. On the way back, they're running out of supplies, and they camped at this place called Alden's Creek. It was called Alder's Creek because there were alder trees around. And five of the guys went out looking for stuff, and I think it was Bill Fairweather and one other guy stayed by the creek, and they noticed some rim rock. And they went by, and they got their pan, and they started tapping on and doing things, and they found some nuggets. They found some gold. You know, enough gold, it was maybe like $100 worth of gold, but $100 worth of gold is like $1,000 back then, you know? So the other guys came back, and they started going, and within a short period of time, they found, like, whatever, $5,000 worth of gold, a lot of gold. Now, what happened was that ultimately became one of the largest gold strikes, that bed, that Alden's Creek, in the United States. In the first 3 years, they took out $10 million of gold in the first 3 years or something like that. And $10 million then was like $10 million. And then I think in 30 years, they took out $30 million or something like that. It was a large strike. But they had obviously struck the mother, they had struck pay dirt. They had struck gold. And so what happened was, but they were out of supplies. So, you know, back then, you know, can you imagine going out there? And you're a prospector, and all of a sudden coming upon a deal where your whole life is going to change. And, you know, you're worried about claim jumpers, you're worried about taking it. So they made a pledge. They said they were going to go into town, they were going to Bannock, they were going to buy supplies, and the deal was nobody was going to breathe a word to anybody about anything, and they were going to get out of Dodge, you know, get out of Bannock, and go back and work the mine. And that was what they were going to do. So they went into town, they were going to meet by the old oak tree, they worked, they got the supplies, they did all that, they put it in their saddlebags, and they went out to the oak tree, and as they looked behind them, there was 200 miners following them. So they knew, I mean, you can imagine, they knew somebody had spilled the beans. They knew somebody spilled the beans. So what happened was, the guys who were following caught up to him, so they talked to the head guy, the guy who was, you know, in front of the 200 guys. He says, who talked? They want to know who talked, who spilled the beans. And the guy said, nobody talked. He says, what do you mean nobody talked? Nobody told us anything. He says, well, how'd you know? He says, we could see it in your eyes. They couldn't hide. They couldn't hide the excitement. They were so excited. They were so out of their mind with excitement and glee, they could not hide what was going on inside. I see the Rebbe, the Nachas. You know what that is? That's a little Yiddish, isn't it? Okay, so you see, I know a little. Okay. They couldn't hide what's going on. He says, we could see it in your eyes. We knew you would hit the mother lode. And that's the only thing I've been doing. I've been hanging around the miners in AA. I've been hanging around those guys. You know, you walk in a room and you see one guy talking about his wife, you know, and one guy talking about money, and one guy putting down the church or the synagogue, and one guy doing this, and one guy with a chip on his shoulder, and then there's one guy who he's always got a smile on his face, he's always trying to help somebody else, he's always got something going on where you say, you almost feel like this guy has no problems. This guy must be a multi-billionaire, he must be Bill Gates or something. He never complains, he never has a problem, he's always in a good mood, he's always grateful, he's always trying to help people. You know that whatever guys that he's hit the mother lode, that's the guys I hung around. I followed them because I wanted them to take me to where the mother lode is. You know, those are the guys I want to hang around with. You know, and I'm at a meeting when I was 3 months sober. And of course, when you come to AA, what do you think? You think it's about drinking. I've been going to thousands of AA meetings. Nobody's drunk. It has nothing to do with alcohol. We all know that it's called alcoholism because it's named after the thing we use in order to chase away the real disease. Because men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontented. Sober, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. We drink because we can't stand life the way we are sober. Because there's something about us, something wrong with us. It's a spiritual malady. It's not a physical malady. And you know what it says in the Bible? Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all things will be added to you. What it says in the Bible is seek the Lord first. Seek God first, and everything else will work out. He'll supply with, that's what it says in AA. It says when the spiritual is cleared up, everything else clears up with it. But of course, we think it's just the alcohol, because the alcohol has then become such a major part of our life. Say alcoholism, it's alcohol. So here's what we think. I get in, you stop drinking, everything's going to be wonderful. You ever think, now that I stop drinking, everything's going to be wonderful. How'd that work out for you? Now listen to me. It is true. A lot of problems that are result, maybe money problems. They don't arrest you for driving while miserable. You know what I mean? You know, I used to eat a lot. He says, don't worry, they won't arrest you for driving while fat. It's true. A lot of problems that are caused specifically by alcohol will go away if you stop drinking alcohol. A whole set of problems. But then you have to deal with that crap that you dealt with in your mind. All the other stuff, you know, like I'm going to be okay as long as everybody else is okay. How How does that work out for you? As long as there isn't any traffic, as long as the check never bounces, as long as the IRS never audits me, as long as there aren't taxes, as long as the world goes okay, as long as everybody acts nice to everybody else, how does it? It's a snake pit out there. And somehow, some way, even without the drinking, you get to the end of the road and you say, "This is a bunch of crap." There's something missing. You never feel okay. Even when you feel okay, you may do something to distract you. You may listen to music. You may have sex. You may have a romantic relationship. You may have something going on, a new car. I don't care what it is. You got a pile in your life to fill that void, but it's only temporary. It's only a temporary fix. Before you know it, the new car becomes an old car and has a flat tire. The new girlfriend is an operating right. Something happens. It's never okay. It's never perfect. There's always something wrong. Then what are you going to do about that? You're 18 months sober. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. You can't go to sleep. You're filled with fear. You don't know what's going to do. Who's going to help you? You know you're all alone. You know, you're not happy with your sobriety. Then you're discovering that. Now, you know what that's about? That's something called alcoholism. That's alcoholism. You know, there's gazillions of people out there. You know what I noticed about the rest of the world? Everybody's an alcoholic. There's not a person out there that's not alcohol. They just don't drink alcohol. There's a lot of people that have alcoholism. They don't go to AA meetings. You understand? Because they don't think they're alcoholics, but they have alcoholism. They just don't use alcohol. Some use food. Some use gossip. Some use other types of things. Some use gambling. Some use different things. Some use pornography. They use different. They don't use alcohol, but it's the same thing. It's that thing where they can't be okay where they are, just the way they are, just like this. You know, their whole life is judged by is turned around by their circumstances. So I walk into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting thinking that this is all about alcohol. And there's some guy and he's talking. His name is Al Kennedy. He's one of the minors. I've met a lot of minors. It was Al Kennedy. And he does a little talk like I'm doing today. And he finishes and he leaves. And I say to my sponsor, I said, "Man, that guy was incredible." He was incredible. You know, he was lifting people up. He was making people feel good. He was saying things that seemed so right on. And, you know, he was just really uplifting. And he walked out, I said, "That guy's great." And my sponsor said, "You know, he's dying of cancer." I thought I didn't hear him. I said to him, I said, no, I'm talking about the guy who just spoke. He says, "Yeah, he's dying of cancer." I said, "The guy who just spoke here, this guy Al Kennedy was speaking." He says, "Russell, he's dying of cancer." Man, I don't know about you, but for many, many years, I'd say one of the number one things that I word in my life is dying. Dying. I said, "Dying of cancer?" He says, "He's dying of cancer." I said, "Well, he didn't say anything about dying." He says, "I know." I said, "He didn't even look like he was dying." He says, "I know." He says, he didn't even make reference to the fact that he was dying. He says, "I know." I said, "You know, if I was up there, you better be damn sure everybody would know I was dying. I might say things, it might happen at the end. I might say something like, 'Well, it's good to be here. I just want you to know, for you to know I'm dying, you know? Just so I can get like a little credit for, you know, being there." I didn't even mention it. And 3 months, I mean, this is the real deal. This isn't a movie. I'm watching this happen. This guy said this stuff. He did that stuff. I was there. I could touch him and feel him. This was not an illusion. You know, and he was a man. He wasn't a superman. He was just a man. I mean, to me, he was a superman. You know what I mean? He just talked the way he talked. He was fearless. He was without fear, trying to help people. And he left. And 3 months later, Al Kennedy was dead. You know what that did to my mind as far as what this thing, you know where it put me on that vision? You know, it says in the Bible, it says, where there is no vision, the people perish. Where there is no, what's your vision? You need to get yourself a vision. If you think this thing is only about drinking, there's nothing wrong with not drinking. You need to get a vision as to where this thing can take you. Where God can take you and what he can do for you. This is part of the vision of what he can do for you, this deal right here. This is part of the vision. And believe me, you know, everybody comes in, they eventually get sober. You know, they get 10 days, 10 weeks, 10 months. Staying sober and being happy with your sobriety and being able to help other people, you know, help other people along the way, lift them up, it's a whole other story. So thank you very much. It's 10 after 9.